good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Colonel Daniel Marvin, who was with the Special Forces for many years. And, of course, he had done many, many things for his country. He believed in what he was doing. He believed in fighting for his country. And until he became a Christian, and not that he doesn't believe in fighting for his country, but he realizes that many of the things he did were not necessarily for his country, but for forces that did not necessarily represent what was best for our Constitution or our way of life. Colonel Marvin, thank you so much for being with us.
I feel blessed just being here, and thank you for all those who are listening in.
Well, I think your story really is so important. In fact, one of the things you told me on one of the other programs was that when you were taking some of your training in 1964, the year after President Kennedy was killed, and you were training in Special Forces, and for our listeners that don't know what Special Forces is, it's a very demanding military activity, and I mean, you're trained to kill. I mean, this is what you're trained for, primarily. Of course, you can maybe do other things. Certainly, I know when Colonel Marvin's team was in Vietnam, they did a great deal to help the people, but these are people who are trained in all of the arts, and of course they're used for special operations. But didn't they actually tell you how many shooters there were the previous year when President Kennedy was killed?
Yes, when we were being taught assassination techniques, they taught us, using as an example the assassination of President Kennedy, as a specific way to eliminate the ruler of a country and put the blame on somebody who really wasn't even involved in the killing. They told us, these are CIA instructors, in a special building that was surrounded by a barbed wire fence and had guard dogs, and it was a top secret instruction at the time, 1964, the spring. 1964, they told us that there were four shooters involved. Two shooters were from the American Mafia in the United States. One was on the rooftop of the building adjacent to the Texas Book Depository. And the other one, who was actually Jimmy Files, who's in prison in Joliet, and I correspond with, he was the shooter on the grassy knoll. Then they had two other mafia people from the Corsican Mafia that were stationed on routes. There was two different routes to the hospital from there, and there was a shooter and a spotter with high-powered binoculars, and their duty was to see if President Kennedy came on their route. If he would still make it, they would shoot him once more.
And, of course, the only way they could have known this was if they had had some people who were involved or knew who the people were involved. And, of course, such information would never come out of the Warren Commission, because the American people were to believe that it was the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald,
right,
that who was responsible for that. And it's amazing, of course, how these stories can be kept secret. You actually, at another time, shortly thereafter, were actually asked to execute Lieutenant Commander in our military and the Navy, because he was an enemy of the country. And you later learned that he was one of the gentlemen who was actually shot the pictures of the Kennedy autopsy at Bethesda. What was that story about?
Well, I was asked by Colonel C.W. Patton, who was my commanding officer, to report to a CIA agent, a company man, we called him, out underneath the pine trees near the headquarters in Fort Bragg. At the time, I was on orders to go to Vietnam. Now, the typical scenario for the use of a Green Beret as an assassin is that he would be on orders to overseas, he would get overseas, then he'd be dropped from the rolls while he did the work that he's volunteered to do. And I might tell the listeners that any covert operation, whether it be assassination, terrorism, sabotage, or just going into another country uninvited, they were all volunteer activities. Well, when I met the CIA man, his name was Walter McKim, out underneath the pine trees, it was another CIA agent, and he asked me if I would volunteer to kill a Navy commander who was about to give information to the enemy. Well, I volunteered thinking it would be overseas. And then he told me it would be at Bethesda, Maryland. I told him, no, I couldn't do it. I had a wife and three children, and I didn't want to all of a sudden disappear here in the United States when I should be home that night. So I refused to do it, and I believe that they got another Green Beret to do it. I'm not absolutely certain of that, but they got somebody to do it, because that was in August 1965, and in October of 1966, he was found dead in his office at Bethesda, Maryland. He was a man that actually filmed the complete autopsy on President Kennedy, and one of the things about assassinating that particular individual was to wait until you were able to get the secrets that he had, which were the pictures.
And, of course, you have since then been in contact with a friend of his. We actually had him as a guest on one of our programs. He was a naval enlisted man who knew the commander, lieutenant commander. What was his story, basically?
Well, he was very good friends with Bill Pitzer. He played chess with him and card games. He actually stood next to Lieutenant Commander Pitzer and viewed the film of the JFK autopsy. And he knows without a doubt that the way the Warren Commission reported it was absolutely wrong. It was more than the bullets that they mentioned. There was more than one shooter. And the actual killing was done from the front. And Jimmy Files will swear to the fact that his bullet hit President Kennedy in the front of the head.
You know, of course, they don't want to try him for that, because the last thing they want the American people to know is that everything that's happened since 1963 has been a cover-up, and they've been able to so effectively confuse the issue. They keep putting out new books all the time. They will have people come out, disinformation stories. The CIA has people planted in the American media. Now, if you doubt that, there's a book called Fixing Intelligence by General Odom, who for many years was in charge of NSA. That's no such agency, or the National Security Agency, whatever you want to call it. But in that book, on two occasions, he talked about how he questioned whether it was appropriate for the CIA to have people planted within the media. Well, of course they have people planted in the media. That's how they control what the American people think. The book, again, Fixing Intelligence by General Odom, if you want copies of the pages, I have that listed. And I think it's so important the American people understand that most of what we read and see and hear has very little to do with the reality. In fact, I have an interview that I did with Dr. Crenshaw now. Dr. Crenshaw is since deceased, but he would actually been, a resident surgeon at the Parkland Hospital when they brought President Kennedy and then, of course, John Connally and even Lee Harvey Oswald into the emergency room there. But a fascinating story, and of course, he attests to the fact, just as Colonel Marvin was saying, that the wounds were entirely different in the body that left that day to the body that arrived at Bethesda. In fact, it was even a different coffin. So we're not getting the truth at call. Of course, Dr. Crenshaw was warned never to tell anybody, or he would never practice medicine. For 20 years, he kept quiet. He eventually wrote a book on this, and he was immediately attacked and vilified and demonized and marginalized by the American Medical Association. Well, instead of taking that laying down, Dr. Crenshaw sued the American Medical Association for libel, and you know what they did? They gave him a couple of $100,000, saying, well, we know we could win the case, but it'll be cheaper just to go ahead and pay him off. And ladies and gentlemen, The truth of the matter is, of course, they did not dare take that case to court because there's so much evidence that we've been lied to about what really happened that day. And do you have any other information on the assassination of John Kennedy, Colonel?
Well, I do know this, and Dennis David, I'm sure, told you this, that not only was that Dr. Crumshaw told to keep silent, Dennis David was warned not to say a word about anything that he knew about the pictures or about the activities that day in Bethesda when the president was brought there. And they've warned even his widow, Lieutenant Commander Pitts's widow, as soon as I learned that he had been a part of the JFK assassination, the periphery of it, I called the widow and I recorded the telephone conversation, and she was the first one to tell me that he had information about the JFK assassination that they wanted, and that there was three Navy intelligence officers ordered her to keep absolutely silent about her own husband's death. When she asked for the wedding ring to be taken from his body, they told her that his hand was mangled and they couldn't get it off. Well, it turns out the pictures of that autopsy, which Kent Heiner will report on when his book comes out and about that assassination, the photos actually show his hand in perfect condition and the ring still on the finger. Well, as we were trained in special forces in assassination techniques, one of the things that you do as a person who has secret information is indicate the location of that information inside your wedding band, which nobody would take from you, assuming nobody would take it from you. So I think that's what happened, is the location of those photos was inscribed on the inside of that wedding ring, and the one that he was actually buried with was something they put on there.
Well, these are incredible stories. We don't like to think about this happening, but unfortunately, there are some very, very wicked people who've taken positions of power in our government, from administration to administration, Democrat, Republican, really doesn't matter, because the same policies always continue, the move towards the New World Order, and, of course, the New World Religion. Well, you know, of course, you are then, of course, have done a lot of research on the assassination of Martin Luther King. Would you like to tell our listeners about that? Because even though you perhaps don't have any first-hand knowledge, you do have a lot of second-hand knowledge because you've studied that.
Well, what's interesting is that in 1967, 7 months after I returned from Vietnam, I was asked if I would volunteer to go to Thailand to the 46th Special Forces, because there was some serious trouble going on there and they couldn't even tell me what it was over the phone. So I accepted the orders and I went there via CIA aircraft to Thailand by way of Hong Kong. And when I got there, the very day that I got there, and I reported the commanding officer and he showed me where my office was, I found a huge box that looking at it, it looked like weapons could be shipped in that box. And I asked the sergeant what was in that box, and he said, those are weapons that Captain So-and-so is shipping back to the States. And I said, well, open it up. I want to see those weapons. And inside there was an M1D. That's an M1 rifle, 30 caliber, with a sniper scope on it and a few carbines. There were a total of five weapons in there, I believe. And they were being shipped by U.S. mail to Detroit, Michigan. And I asked Captain Crummy, C-R-U-M-M-E-Y, who was the assistant S-4, how many of these boxes have been shipped? He said, well, the best of his knowledge, that this captain had shipped 120 weapons this way.
Well, now, why was he shipping weapons from Vietnam to the United States or from Thailand to the United States?
Well, if you... I talked to William Pepper, who actually represented the King family in the trial in Memphis, Tennessee here a couple years ago, that proved that the government was 70% responsible for the actual killing of Martin Luther King Jr. I told him about this gun running, and in his book, An Act of State, which is his last book about the Martin Luther King Jr. assassination, he tells in there about gun running being a part of it. and that General Yarbrough, who had commanded the Green Berets when I was in them, as Assistant Chief of Staff of Intelligence for the United States Army, headed up the team effort to surveil every movement that Martin Luther King Jr. made. And during his last 6 months, and they also had orders in his book, Orders to Kill. He tells how they had orders to, if the shooter missed, that they had orders to shoot to kill Martin Luther King.
In other words, they were going to kill Martin Luther King. That's because right. He was at that time coming out strongly against the Vietnam War, and they wanted to continue that war for a while longer.
That's
because
right.
They changed America, and the war was important. It was during that period of time they took God and prayer out of our schools.
Amen.
They centralized all power in Washington, D.C. They suddenly found that women had a right to kill the unborn child within them.
Amen.
Abortion and everything, of course, what really happened was Vietnam was a distraction. Now, if you were out there in the listening audience, you doubt what I'm saying, I suggest you get the article by McGeorge Bundy, January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs, entitled Either Guns or Butter, or The End of Either Guns or Butter. McGeorge Bundy, of course, Skull and Bones, Council on Foreign Relations, National Security Advisor to both President Johnson and President Kennedy, and the man primarily instrumental in bringing us into Vietnam and convincing the presidents that we had to be there. Of course, John Kennedy really didn't want to go into Vietnam, and then they sent him on a trip to Dallas. But McGeorge Bundy writes in that 1967 article that it would be an act of folly for any true liberal to say we had a choice between persistence in Vietnam and this wonderful program they had here in the United States for health, education, and welfare, because exactly the opposite was the case. Anybody who believed in the great new departures in health and education and welfare shouldn't say we ought to get out of Vietnam. The opposite was the case. The road forward at home was by persistence in Vietnam. And if we were to pull out of Vietnam, there'd be a strong reaction to our policies.
Well,
and we don't have that article. We can get it for our listeners out there. And so, but of course, Martin Luther King was agitating, was saying that war was wrong, and he had to die.
I tell you, he was a courageous man. I mean, he led his people against armed people every time on those peace movements that he had. And what they used the guns for, by the way, for, and William Pepper discusses the fact that General Yarbrough pulled two teams of Green Berets from the reserve forces and put them on active duty, and their job was, of course, to tail Martin Luther King Jr. and also to infiltrate the Black Panthers and those units that were militant parts of the black movements. And of course, a weapon is an absolutely outstanding way to infiltrate, because you can offer weapons to get in there to be a part of it and act like you're part of their beliefs and everything when you're there really to spy on them. You know, going back to the Vietnam thing, if I may, if we were in there to win, we were in there to win when President Kennedy was alive, and we were going to do it strictly with Green Beret advisors, and he believed in the Green Berets. And if he had done it his way, had been allowed to do it his way, there would still be a South Vietnam. They can read my book, Expendable Elite, which you have to offer them on your program, and they can find out in there where President Johnson personally authorized the sanctuaries for the enemy in inside of Cambodia, and we were not permitted to invade Cambodia to kill the enemy that had killed our people. I was the only one, the first one allowed to go in there, but it wasn't because President Johnson wanted me to. It's because Wahhaus wanted me to.
And, of course, you were there, and what the American people don't understand is they put every barrier in the way of our men of winning the war. We weren't allowed to, you know, to bomb the port at Haiphong. We weren't allowed to bomb the rail yards. We weren't allowed to bomb the hydroelectric plants and shut down North Vietnam, or bomb the dikes and flood North Vietnam. It would have been very easy to have stopped the war at any time. I personally talked to William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, who told me we could have won at any time.
Amen.
General Lewis Walt told me the same thing, but we sent our boys over there to fight and suffer and die. with never any intention at all of winning the war. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Colonel Marvin. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this evening is Colonel Daniel Marvin. His book, Expendable Elite, which is available if you're interested in knowing more about it, why you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we can tell you how to get a copy of an excellent book, Colonel Marvin's story. And, of course, since he's written the story, he's come under tremendous pressure from the Green Beret and retired Officers Association, haven't you, Colonel?
The Special Forces Association, which has 6,000 members to it, either active or retired Green Berets. It's an organization that a lot of people would not want to have going against them.
And, of course, why are they so furious with you? Because you've told some of the secrets that the Green Berets are used for assassinations, or what?
Yeah, I've told, you know, the good part about what we did in Vietnam, but I've also told the ugly part, the part that goes against the Geneva Convention, the assassinations, the killing of innocent people and things of that nature that they don't want to come out. And they were one of the first people that got a copy of my book because I told them that I needed their help to clean up our act. As far as the Green Berets is the best organization the United States Army ever had, if it's used properly, and to help clean up our act and not end up losing the Green Berets like Canada did. They no longer have special forces because they got caught in the same thing, just doing a lot of dirty stuff. And I wanted to stop that. And, I've had all kinds of threats. I had a congressman's senior staffer, Congressman Matthew McHugh from Ithaca, New York, his senior staffer, called a member of my family and said, look, you can tell Colonel Marvin that he may not be afraid of anybody but Jesus Christ, but remind him he's got grandchildren. Now, let me tell you, that put a wall between me and my family from then on, because they were all scared half to death. And now since then, some of them have got saved, and the Lord has protected them during these times. We also were threatened by Congressman McHugh himself and another congressman staffer, saying that somebody would get hurt if we continued to march on these things.
But of course, you have to get the truth out, and of course, what we are doing is certainly very unpopular. I know we're constantly being monitored by government because we can tell on our internet who's listening, and it's amazing how many people in the military and government are listening.
Oh yeah.
But you have to put your faith in the Lord, and if they're going to come after me, they're going to come after me. I can't stop them, but
amen.
I will put my Lord up against their the forces that energize them anytime, and hope
right.
And pray for protection.
Amen. You know, I was talking about the sanctuaries that President Johnson gave the enemy inside Cambodia. Not only that, and by the way, General Westmoreland, in his book, A Soldier Reports, admits that he was totally aware of the enemy sanctuaries and also the fact that the enemy was using the Mekong River, and I personally saw this, use the Mekong River to haul war goods to our enemy, weapons and ammunition, with our protection. Haul them all the way through Vietnam into Cambodia, and there they'd be offloaded for the enemy to use. And I believe, and I don't know this for a fact, I did the other, that they use those same ships to bring drugs back down through Vietnam for what the CIA needed for their purposes.
And I think what people have to understand is that this a large part of what went on over there had to do with drugs, CIA, and money for black projects. We'll be right back here with Colonel Marvin. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Colonel Daniel Marvin. His book is The Expendable Elite. That's The Expendable Elite, and if you'd like to know more about the book or get more information about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll be glad to tell you about the book, which we feel is a very important book because it's written on a first-hand basis by a man who was there. And you actually were allowed to go into Cambodia in violation, of course, of all the rules. And yet, of course, you didn't necessarily play by the rules. The government didn't play by the rules. And you were allowed to go into Cambodia and clean up some of these Viet Cong sites that were threatening the people in your region.
Yes, the way that happened, Major Foy Van Lee, who was the military advisor to the Central Committee of the Wahao Nation, which is, the Wahaos are a militant sect of the Buddhist religion. Wonderful people. Nicest people I've ever met. Most brave, too. Anyway, Major Foy Van Lee got sick and tired of his people being killed inside of Vietnam from the Viet Cong, who had the exclusive use of the property just on the other side of the border to attack us from. So he went to Saigon and met with the Minister of Defense, and he actually forced an issue of a permit for our camp in An Phu, that district, to actually go across the border when the enemy attacked us, or to, and to push them back out of their sanctuaries right next to the border. And I came to Vietnam at that time, and Colonel Tuttle, William Tuttle, asked me if I would volunteer to head up an independent operation in An Phu. And he told me it was top secret, we'd be the first to be able to go into Cambodia. But he warned me, he said, when you go into Cambodia, you're on your own. We'll not give you artillery support. We'll not give you medical evacuation support or air support. And if you're caught inside of Cambodia, it'll be as if you were a deserter.
And, you know, this is the technique that they use. I just read about this man who was with the CIA and sent to prison for 20 years, and the CIA kept insisting they didn't know who he was.
That oh, yeah.
He hadn't, and he hadn't worked for him. And now, of course, the information has come out that the CIA and government officials went before the court, and they lied, and the information is out. The man's going to get out after 20 years in prison. And what was his crime? Why, he did what he was supposed to do. He worked for the CIA, carried out his orders. But, of course, when he got caught, they never heard of him. And not only had they not heard of him, but they lied to make sure he'd go to prison for the rest of his life. And he's 75 years old now. He's finally getting out after 20 years. How do you feel about a government that would betray their fighting men?
Who, me? I think it's absolutely terrible.
I do, too. And but anyway,
you know, the movie Apocalypse Now is actually based on a true story of a A-team, a Green Beret A-team that went into the Cao Mau Peninsula of Vietnam, worked with Father Hoa, and put together an organization of about 800 Catholic civilian irregulars, and they actually cleared the Viet Cong out of that area. And I don't know if the central government or the CIA was worried about them getting too strong, but they ordered our A-team out of there. And every man on that team except the commanding officer reported back to his unit up in Canto, and the commander was left there, and then they sent two Green Berets in to kill him.
And now they were going to kill him because he disobeyed orders and didn't pull out.
That's right.
But he didn't pull out because he wanted, of course, to use that as a base to kill the North Vietnamese or the Viet Cong, and he thought we were there to win the war.
He was loyal, being loyal to the people he went there to help.
Right.
Now, my men were all ordered out, but they all stayed. When we were threatened by the CIA, and what did the CIA do? They sent an entire Arvin regiment to attack my camp and kill all of us. And if it wasn't for a brave lieutenant general named Quang Van Dang and his senior American advisor named William Desabri, we'd all been dead.
And I think that you have to understand that there are people within the Central Intelligence Agency who have no respect for life or for honor or anything else. You disobey their orders, they're going to kill you. And then that way there are no there's no one to testify against them. And so you tell this story in your book, don't you, about how they sent this regiment to kill you?
Yes, I do. And, of course, the one of the things that they do, too, is they compartmentalize everything so that and any orders that you get for anything illegal comes from not your direct commander but the commander above him. And your direct commander doesn't even know what you're doing.
Right. And then, of course, when things go wrong, why, they can always deny they ever knew you.
That's right.
Well, we're going to be back here in a few moments. And when we get back, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Colonel Daniel Marvin, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, who gave his best for his country, went overseas to fight and to risk his life and perhaps to die, thinking he was fighting for freedom. And, of course, what a sad situation it was when he finally realized that his dreams, his ideas, his sacrifice, and the sacrifice of so many men were for an entirely different cause. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, and we're talking about the experiences he had when he was there in Vietnam, and of course what he's found out as the years have gone by, and he's been out of the military, but trying to bring the truth out about what happened, and of course the special forces are warriors. They're men who are trained to kill. That's what you do, but I'm sure that the majority of them really believe that what they're doing is for our country. But there's this sense of blindly following orders. You don't question orders that are given. Of course, Colonel Marvin had a couple of opportunities to volunteer. He actually had volunteered at one time to kill the leader of a sovereign country, Prince Sihanouk. Would you like to tell that story?
Well, yes. A CIA agent named Walter McKim came to my camp, and he met with Major Foy Van Lee and myself. And he had with him a package which had maps and information on Cambodian Crown Prince Sihanouk and a trip he was going to be taking up to Angkor Wat temples inside of Cambodia. But we were the closest camp, special forces camp, to that area in Cambodia. And he asked me to volunteer to train up a group of men, all Vietnamese, that would go in and pretend to be Viet Cong and be equipped and dressed and everything else in black pajamas, like we normally wore anyway, for night fighting, go into Cambodia, ambush Prince Sihanouk and his party, kill them all, and then come back out and make it look like the Viet Cong had did it. And I accepted the mission. I didn't have any love for Prince Sihanouk any more than I did for President Johnson in allowing the enemy the sanctuaries. And we trained the men in 2 days. Well, I had given them a quid pro quo. This is important. That I demanded that before we go across that border to kill Sihanouk, that President Johnson tell the American people that there would be no more enemy safe havens in Cambodia. And that I wanted to hear that from a friend of mine in Fort Bragg who would read the New York Times and listen to the radio and be able to tell me without a doubt that President Johnson had done this. Well, they refused to do this. I don't know whether they even contacted President Johnson. But when he came back 2 days before that mission was supposed to go into Cambodia to kill Sihanouk, he at first refused to even answer me on it. But then once I realized that the quid pro quo had not been met, I ordered him out of my camp, and that's when they had the 10 days, six to 10 days later, I forget which now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, and he was telling us, of course, he had been asked to kill the Prince of Cambodia, Sihanouk. And when he refused to do that, the CIA sent a unit of men to assassinate he and his forces. In other words, they were going to take out this whole special forces unit and simply kill them so there would be no record of what happened. This is the way things were done over there, and you're not going to get this story, certainly not from Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly. Or you're supposed to think that we would not do things like that. In war, you do terrible things. But even worse when you're dealing with the CIA that set up Operation Phoenix. It's really one of the most horrible things that happened. Colonel, do you have any personal experience with Operation Phoenix as was practiced over there?
The first time that I met Walter McKim, he brought a Phoenix team into my district, and I had him leave. I told him we didn't need him or his people in our district assassinating innocent people.
Now, could you explain to our listeners what Operation Phoenix was? Because this is totally immoral. The people who were involved in that, at least who ordered that, should all be tried and convicted of murder, because they were actually, in many instances, actually murdering innocent civilians, weren't they?
There were teams, yes, there were teams of one or two CIA agents and then Vietnamese nationals who were specifically trained in interrogation techniques and assassination techniques. And they would go into villages, and whoever they thought was the enemy or was getting information for the enemy, they'd take care of them and eliminate them right there on the spot. I think there's something like 20,000 Vietnamese killed by the Phoenix program.
And I mean, a lot of them were since innocent people. Maybe if you didn't like somebody, you appointed them out and said they're an informer. And
that's right. Oh, a lot of that happened. I'm sure of that. That's why I refused to have them even in my area. I didn't allow Agent Orange to be used in my area. I didn't allow B-52s to bomb into my area. I did my best to protect the civilians. And let me tell you, we had an enviable record, and I guess we got to go to the telephone calls here soon, that for in those 7 months of bombarding inside the Cambodian area in the enemy sanctuaries, because of the way that we worked with the Cambodian officials, the loyal ones to the truth over there, and to Cambodia itself, we did not injure or kill one Cambodian civilian when we killed over 500 of the enemy over there.
Well, that's really an enviable record. And of course, eventually, when the Viet Cong realized that you were going to retaliate against them, going into their sanctuary, that you weren't going to play by the game rules, and of course, you had been ordered to go ahead and do it, but told if you got into trouble, you were on your own.
Right.
So they really more or less left you alone, didn't they?
No. They moved as far back as they could where they knew we wouldn't attempt to hit them beyond the range of our mortars. And that's where they would attack from. But it gave us the time that we needed to be prepared to repel them, and we won all the battles.
Okay, well, let's go to John, who's calling here. Hi, John. Where are you calling from?
Paul.
Okay, good to have you with us.
Yes, sir. Colonel Marvin, I wanted to ask you what your take was on the testimony of one Colonel Oliver North. I know he was on Focus on the Family, and he gave a very powerful Christian testimony that he was saved in the Marine Corps, and he's been witnessing to other Marines and so forth and so on. And given the caveat, as Dr. Stan says, you know, you can't know what's in a man's heart for sure. I know Dr. Stan's talked to President Bush and so forth. But so far as I know, Colonel North has never repented of his activities in the Central Intelligence Agency.
Let's ask Colonel Marvin. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, certainly. You know, in fact, at first, I thought he was being set up, and the former chief of the CIA operations in Vietnam called me and told me of the setup that they had that would allow them to absolutely control Colonel North's computer, so that everything that he put into that computer was automatically fed to another computer, so that when he erased things, he only erased them from his computer.
No, was it with this? I was in Vietnam or what?
No. This was in the United States.
Okay, right.
And so I wrote to Colonel North and his attorney, and I gave him that information. But then it seemed like to me that he folded and did not press back any charges against the government at all. He just his story kind of disappeared. But he was set up, as almost anybody was in those days, that when you work for the CIA, they control everything.
And you're speaking now then when we had the situation as far as the Iran-Contra is concerned? Is this speaking up?
Yes.
Okay, John, does that answer?
Pretty concisely, what about the drug running? Are any of those allegations true?
You're talking about a CIA drug running or all of
Colonel North's activities in drug running?
I believe so.
They are true.
I believe so.
All right. Anything else? Well, of course, we can't say with any degree of certainty, but there have been much to suggest. I know that Colonel North told one of my best friends, and his best friend was a man named Richard Armitage. And for those of you who don't know, Richard Armitage, who today is Deputy Secretary of State, Richard Armitage, back in the time of in 1980s, was during the Reagan administration, at least according to General the man in charge of the Golden Triangle, General, I've forgotten his name, Kansu or something like that. Anyway, he said Armitage was the man who was buying all of their opium. So, anyway, there are certain things that we're pretty concerned about. Thank you so much for calling, John.
Thank you.
John, I can mention this, John, that
Yeah.
If Colonel North may have been just like any other officer who thought he was doing the best for this country based on orders from higher headquarters.
And I think that that really is so true, John. A lot of people get drawn into this, thinking, of course, that the people on, above them are well-motivated. When you find out that they're not, though, then what do you do? And you could do what Colonel Marvin has done when he became a born-again Christian, and that is speak out. And, of course, we'll have to see what Colonel North does about that, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our telephone again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we're talking about Colonel Marvin's firsthand experience there in Vietnam and of course, in Cambodia, going into Cambodia. And, of course, the attempt by the CIA to have him killed. Was anything done to the CIA officers who sent the regiment in to kill you and your team?
Oh, not that I know of. In fact, Walter McKim was the one that came to our camp with the assassination request. Is in industry that's tied in with the DIA right now. Those people managed to stay alive because, you know, a lot of people believe that the CIA actually goes around and has their own assassins. They hire everybody. It's either a Green Beret or it's Mafia. When I met with the Mafia Don in Natick and Boston, Massachusetts, in 1964, the spring of 64, just after I graduated from Special Forces School, I asked him point blank if he had been asked by the agency, by the company, to be involved in the Kennedy hit, and he said, yes, he had. He was called by the company, but he told them, and I can quote him on this, that he said, I told them we don't have no problems with the Kennedys in Massachusetts.
Well, I think if anybody has any question at all, there's a wonderful book we carry by the brother of the head of the Mafia, Chuck Giancano. He was Sam Giancano's brother, and they talk there openly about how the Mafia carried out the assassinations for the Central Intelligence Agency,
right.
And including the assassination of heads of state. So I think it's so, and the book is called Double Cross, and you want to know more about that, Double Cross by Chuck Giancano. You can call us at 1-800-544-8927. And remember this book, The Expendable Elite, is one of the most important books written because it's written first-hand knowledge from a man who was part of this elite group of assassins trained by your government. How is the book doing? Now, you had a great deal of difficulty getting your book, The Expendable Elite, actually published, didn't you?
It took me 13 years to find, and actually I didn't find the publisher, Jim Mars, who you know, who wrote the book Crossfire and The War on Freedom. He actually called Chris Milligan and told him, he says, call Colonel Marvin and publish his book. Now after 13 years of talking with all the publishers and all of them deciding against it because of the CIA involvement in the book, I was about to give up. So Chris called me and he told me that, and then I'll have to admit, I thought at first Chris was probably working for the CIA and trying to get control of my book. So I asked him to send me a book that he'd published that would prove to me that he was on the up and up. So he sent me America's Secret Establishment, an introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones, and also Barry Boys.
Barry and the Boys, right.
Barry and the Boys. And I know some of the people in both of those books that I've been involved with. So I sent him a manuscript, and that's how the book finally got published.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chris Milligan's a very brave person to publish that book, Barry and the Boys. This is the story of Barry Seal. And Barry Seal was the top drug brother for the Central Intelligence Agency.
Amen.
And he was eventually assassinated here in the United States.
Amen.
Because, of course, he had become a liability, and, of course, because of his close association with a former head of the CIA named George Herbert Walker Bush. And Seal was simply, I won't go into the details of how he was, but he was set up to be assassinated, and he was. But, of course, Seal worked closely with the CIA, and Barry, of course, was Barry Seal. And the boys, They were all the members of the CIA working with the drug smuggling, but we can't let the American people know that, because, of course, if they knew that the CIA was smuggling drugs, maybe the war on terror isn't really a war on terror. Maybe the war on cancer isn't a war on cancer. Maybe the war on terrorism isn't really a war on terrorism. It's a war on the American people. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Our guest is Colonel Daniel Marvin. And how has the book moved now since it's been published and distributed?
Not real fast, but we believe that this will be the year, because of people like yourself. We're starting to get some feelers from the national media. I think they're scared to death to cover this, but there is a possibility that we'll be getting this book onto a major TV program, and I'm working on that now. But the Special Forces Association went out to everybody they could and told them that the book was 100% lies.
Now, this was the Special Forces Association.
That's right. And I'm sure that there's operatives within the CIA. In fact, I finally had to write the CEO of Amazon and the CEO of Barnes & Noble, though they had them on the Internet, so you could order them that way. The only way you'd know they're there if you went there actually looking for a book that you didn't know about, you know? So I told them that I'd like to have them in the stores. And I, in my letter to them, and then later I talked with them, I told them, I asked them, has the CIA come to you and discouraged you from putting in the stores? They didn't answer me, except to call me and put somebody in touch with me, and they're getting out in the stores now for the first time this month.
Well, this has happened many, many times. The CIA does actually prevent books from being published. In fact, our good friend Craig Roberts had a wonderful book, which we carry, called The Medusa File. And, of course, one of the major, in fact, it was Simon & Schuster. I was going to print it, and then they canceled it. But the fellow from Simon & Schuster called Craig and said, you know, you've got to get that book published. And Craig says, if it's a good book, why won't you publish? And the man said, because the CIA agents working at the Simon & Schuster would have me fired, but it's a great book. You've got to get it published. And so Craig reproduced that himself, Medusa File, and another one of the books you can get from us. Well, let's go to Eric, who's calling from Compton. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Happy New Year, Dr. Smith. I'm fine.
Good to have you with us.
Okay. I want to ask Colonel Marvin, God bless you, Colonel Marvin, and
thank you, and God bless you too.
You appreciate your courage, man. I don't know what you're up against, but I'm coming, beginning to understand.
You've been listening to Radio Liberty too long.
Listen, Dr. Stan, and actually, I tell you, I first started off, Dr. Stan, with Bo Grykes, and I heard some tapes that he did about the same kind of stuff, and then I picked you up from Bo about 8 years ago. 8 to 10, I've been with you ever since. I was curious if Colonel Marvin knew Bo and what has become of him.
I sure did. In fact, he is the first man to come forward, and this will be in Kent Heiner's book that he's coming out with about the assassination of William Bruce Pitcher. Bo Grykes is the first one to come out and corroborate the fact that there was assassination training at Fort Bragg that I took and that other Green Berets took. And in fact, he was an assassination instructor. I knew him at Fort Bragg in 1964. He was one of the assassination instructors. So that information will be coming out. He has been hammered and threatened and everything else by our government. It's a wonder he's still alive. God bless him, I'll tell you that, for having the courage to stand up to the truth.
Well, it cost him his family, it cost him his wife, and
yep.
You know, he's been through, they actually brought lawsuits against him. Anything at all, of course, to harass people who tell the truth in America.
That's
what a sad commentary on what was once a great and noble nation.
As far as I understand, I mean, if you cut him, he would have bled red, white, and blue blood. And
that's right.
They sent him over to I forget exactly what it was, but he met the Kunsaw, was the guy's name.
Kunsaw was in the Golden Triangle.
And he found this drug connection, and you know this guy's name that keep popping up is, I noticed, I got a tape from Bo.
Yeah, that's Richard Armitage is the name you're thinking
of. How'd you know? That's the name keeps popping up. Yep. Every time I turn around, Richard Armitage. I think he's like second in command of this.
He's the Deputy Secretary of State.
Yeah, he just keeps popping up all over the place.
You're going to be carrying that book, Fleshing Out Skull and Bones, too, right?
Yes, I am. We carry that. That's another book.
You'll read about those people right in that book.
Okay, that's another book we have. It's Fleshing Out Skull and Bones by Chris Milligan, who actually published Colonel Marvin's book. So there's sort of a little group of people out here on the front lines of this battle, and believe me, I want you praying for all of them out there in the listening audience, because Colonel Marvin's right on the very front lines of this whole affair.
Well, God bless both of you guys. Hang in there. Keep up the good work. The American people, we've got to know the truth.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks so much, Eric.
You guys take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Eric calling from Compton. And if you're out there and you have another question, we have time for one or two more calls. Give us a call at 1-888.
Now, let me mention something, if I may. It kind of ties in with what we were just talking about. General Dang came under complete pressure once he saved our lives there in Vietnam, and the CIA managed to get him to lose his job as the Corps commander, and then they followed him to the States, and he actually ended up having to go into Canada and live there under an assumed name because they kept threatening him and his family. And the way that I finally got all of that stopped and got him into this country, I wrote President George Herbert Walker Bush, and I told him that I was intimately familiar with his role in the CIA prior to admitting that he was a part of the CIA, and that I wanted action taken immediately to investigate the false charges that were made by the CIA and the State Department against General Quang Van Dang. Within 2 weeks, a complete investigation began in all the agencies. Dang was cleared of all the false charges. There's two file cabinet drawers full of charges up in Canada. A friend of mine went and met with a lady who stored those files up in Canada. They were all sent to her by the CIA, and not a one of them was true.
Well, let's go to Ron, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Well, hi, Dr. Stan.
You're from a good area.
I want to commend you for your patriotism, sir, standing up to the knaves who have unfortunately taking control of our society. However, I do want to take issue with your assessment of Dr. Martin Luther King.
All right. Well, what do you want to say?
Well, I read some rather disparaging information on the website of a fellow named Joel Skousen.
Mm-hmm. So what about now? What specifically about Martin Luther King?
Well, from some of the things I've read, the guy was a rather degenerate fellow. And in addition, I happened to be at a dinner or something, a luncheon, I guess, on his birthday, and they had a fellow from the NAACP come down and speak. And he mentioned the fact that when Dr. King was in, I guess before he was a doctor, was in college, he more or less lost his faith and considered the Bible just a bunch of myths and ready to get out of the business. And someone convinced him that it was an ideal venue upon which to launch some of his social crusades.
Now, does that justify then assassinating him?
Absolutely not. I think that was absolutely it was a heinous crime.
Right.
Let me mention to you what the mechanisms that the CIA and our government and the NSA have to discredit people are just absolutely amazing. You may be interested in knowing that they even had, and this was 1964 when we were taught this, they had typewriters in the CIA area there in Virginia that were of all ages, and they had paper that was of all ages and carbon paper, so that they could reproduce or they could make up a letter dated 1934 or 46 or 58, and if you were to test that in a laboratory, it would prove to be from that age, and they could say anything they wanted to on that. They could falsify signatures. They taught us all kinds of different things, ways to infiltrate organizations. That man that spoke up against Dr. Martin Luther King, and let me tell you, I've got a white neighbor here in Cazenovia, New York, that marched with Dr. King. And let me tell you, he stood behind him when he faced all those guns and everything else for the good of the black people of this nation. And I am extremely proud just to have even known about Martin Luther King Jr. I would love to have marched with him.
Well, I don't dispute the fact that he stood against some real vicious bigots and haters. I think his policies have absolutely destroyed the black family. And that was all this welfare and giveaways.
Now, wait a minute. He had nothing to do with the welfare and giveaways. No. He was in the civil rights movement, not the welfare and giveaways. So, obviously, detect a little bit of prejudice against him? Why would you say he's responsible for welfare and giveaways?
Well, he was... are you familiar with Jesse Lee Peterson?
Let me interject something,
if I may. Have you ever been poor? You know, when I grew up in Chicago, my dad left us.
I tell you, sir, I've never been poor. I've been in the United States.
Well, I was, okay? And we lived and went to school with the blacks, and I went to the same Salvation Army that they did. That's where we got our clothes. That's where we ate in the Catholic Church. And there are people that need welfare.
I could get a whole debate about who should be...
Ron, I don't want to get into a debate, and I know there are many people who agree with you. Ron, let me say something, and then you can come in. I have always felt, as you have, that everything about Martin Luther King was bad, that he was a womanizer, and in fact, J. Edgar Hoover said he was a terrible womanizer.
So did Ralph Abernathy.
All right. So, and maybe he was a womanizer. I mean, but I know that so much of what we believe is what they want us to believe. And without any personal first-hand knowledge, I'm really at sort of a loss to say. But the major issue is he was killed, he was assassinated because he wanted to get out of Vietnam. I believe that was the reason he was killed.
Killing people is murder, and they ought to... track those people down and try them.
Okay, fine. So
Amen.
We can agree on that. And thank you so much for calling, Ron. And I know how you feel, and I don't know what the truth is. I wish I did. But if Abernathy...
Jesus Christ is the truth.
Right?
We know that.
Amen to that. Thanks
Amen.
So much. Bye-bye. Okay, Colonel, we're just about out of time. And Ron feels very, very strongly. And I've heard these things, and I've had some of my friends written books about Martin Luther King. But I think you're absolutely right. They can... alter everything we believe because they can create our reality because they control the media. We're just about out of the time. Would you like to give some parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I would just hope and pray that your listeners would take advantage of material that has been written by people actually involved in these situations that have firsthand knowledge, and that they would help to gradually bring to this government the honesty and the honor that we need to have in it by electing the right people. Get out there and vote. Get out there and get in the political process and get to the truth.
But I think the first thing
thank
to do
you.
Is get informed. And thank you, Colonel, for Marvin, for being with us. And thank you very much for having the courage to stand for righteousness.
God bless you.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, our guest has been Colonel Daniel Marvin. And this book is The Expendable Elite. And we've got real problems in America. That we have good people who are trying to tell the truth, who are being threatened, and their families are being threatened. And I've heard this story over and over again. One of these evenings we'll have to do a story of what happened to the Liberty, the USS Liberty that was attacked off the shores of Egypt in the 1967 war. This is the most incredible story. And the men who were on the Liberty who survived the vicious attack, we're told if they ever told anything about what they knew or what happened, they would spend the rest of their lives in Leavenworth. And these were military people and military officers. Well, our job is to get the truth out, to help you think, and pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers. Please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty. We'll be back with you again on Monday, and until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But right now we're going, of course, to ask you to hold your calls. We're hoping to have Ron and Kathy on the program. We're going to be talking about the chemtrails here in the Monterey Bay area, because Santa Cruz seems to be sort of a center of focus for the chemtrails. And let's see, who we have. Who do we have on the line here?
Hi, I'm Inca from Kentucky.
You're Inca. Okay, we've got Inca calling, and then we're going to, is it Ron? Well, anyway, we're going to have another caller, so that a couple of people are going to be calling in on the chemtrails. And Inca, how did you get involved in the chemtrails? Were you skeptical about this whole thing when you first heard about them?
Oh, most definitely. That was probably, my skepticism was probably the motivating factor in starting Chemtrails 911 website. I was just over blown away at the fact that this was happening in our skies. And so I began just to post some photos on the web and researching it, trying to prove this phenomenon wrong.
And so what happened?
Well, as I dug into more and more research about the history of human experimentation, dug into a little research on global warming and the use of weather modification for military purposes, it became so clear to me that this just isn't normal jet traffic. These balloons that are floating above the air, suspending for hours, are not normal.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, what about the contrails? How do you separate a contrail from a chemtrail?
Well, for me, the most easiest is that when I see a contrail, it's within seconds, maybe minutes at the most extreme. Chemtrails actually don't disappear. They get longer. They spread out. When you see a series of chemtrails engulfing the sky, they're laid out in systematic patterns to form a thick cloud cover. They join one another. They grow, and eventually, over time, the whole sky just loses its blueness. When I was on the East Coast over the holidays, I was watching chemtrail activity, and the sky was beautiful till about 11 o'clock in the morning. And within 4 hours, about a dozen jets came by and took any blue out of the sky.
Well, now, of course, the thing is that usually they'll go back and forth. Now, if you're flying from point A to point B, you don't go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, which is what they do when they're doing the spraying. And they're spraying something, but, of course, it's all top secret because you common folks aren't smart enough to understand that there really is an elite who knows what's best for all of us. And if you, of course, question them, you must be one of those people who believes in black helicopters, and you probably believe there was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. So, of course, as you get into this, Inca, you know, you're probably like I was. When I got started back in 1962, I guess I was about 32 years old, 33 years old. And I could not, for the sake of me, believe that all these things were going on in society that I'd never heard of before. And the thought that, you know, we were a republic and not a democracy, that I'd been lied to all through school, and that we'd actually brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist, and that the media in America was lying to us. Those thoughts were so foreign from my mind that I set out to prove them wrong, and that was a terrible mistake, because my life has never been the same since. And obviously, you've started on the same pathway that I have 40 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, most definitely.
Well, let's go to Ron. Is this Ron we have on the line? Who do we have on line six here? Is there somebody on line six? Well, I guess we've still got... is there anybody else on the line? No, Ron. No one's on the line, okay?
Well, you know, as I was looking into some of this stuff, you know, I realized that most of the, you know, a great portion of the spray campaign within the Department of Defense, you know, started around in the 50s. And when you look back at it, they were spraying people with zinc candium sulfide over Winnipeg and Fort Wayne to show how, to get an idea on how chemicals can disperse per person over a specific area. In the 1953 Joint Army-Navy-CIA experiments conducted, tens of thousands of people in New York and San Francisco were exposed to airborne Citria marcescens and Bacillus globulus. I'm sure you probably know a little more about that. And so the history just goes on and on. It's phenomenal. Recent history shows that in 1987, the Department of Defense admits that despite a treaty banning research and development of biological agents, it continues to operate the research facilities in 127 facilities and universities across the nation. So they may be telling us one thing when what they're actually doing is totally different.
Well, I fear that you're absolutely right. And, of course, we have a report. It's called the Rockefeller Committee Report. Although it doesn't deal specifically with chemtrails, it deals with the experiments on hundreds of thousands of American people without their consent or knowledge. And, of course, it gets into the spraying of Serratia and other bacteria off the coast of San Francisco to let those clouds just drift in just to see what they did. And people died as a result of it, but... of course, the government did everything they could to cover it up, and they're still doing everything they can to cover up the truth today. Do we have Ron on the line now?
I am here. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for so much for being with us. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us how you got involved in the looking into this whole story of chemtrails?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to be on the show. You know, honestly, I don't remember exactly how I heard about these chemtrails. But I remember it was on the internet and someone mentioned it to me, and I started doing some research and looking at the photos and hearing the documentation and seeing what people were saying and what the evidence was, and I started looking out my window. And I'd look out my window and I'd look at the photos and I'd look out my window and I started noticing that there were these trails in the sky, exactly like the photographs from all over the country, all over Canada, right here in our skies of Santa Cruz. And I thought this was just too bizarre. You know, how could this be? It's so obvious. And the more research I did, the more I looked into it and found out about Will Thomas's research and just went to as many websites as I could. And there was all kinds of information. I didn't believe it all. The internet's full of all kinds of things. I tried to use my critical thinking as much as possible, but I knew that something was going on. These trails were in the sky. So finally I got to a point when I realized that people were just walking around, business as usual, and nobody was saying anything. I was completely convinced that something was being sprayed, and I started noticing the planes in action spraying. I remembered as a child watching the planes, and I think your listeners can probably relate to this, and sometimes a plane would have a contrail, it would have a tail, and you'd see the plane and you'd see the tail, and the tail would follow the plane, and as the end would fall off, the new plume was created. That's a normal jet contrail, just ice crystals. You would never see the plume just sit there all across the sky and disperse over many, many hours. It would disperse over maybe a few seconds, 30 seconds, a few minutes, and very quickly, and then it would disappear, a normal jet contrail. But these chemtrails were persisting. So I finally got to a point where I felt like I have to tell my friends and family here in Santa Cruz that something is going on. So knowing I'd be laughed at, I went downtown to Pacific Garden Mall with a big sign saying, "Wake up Santa Cruz, you are being sprayed with chemicals." Of course, I had people laugh at me and roll their eyes when other people would come up to me and shake my hand and thank me. And I said, "What do you know?" And they said they've been watching it for years, since 1998, 1999, when it started. And people said that it's real, and they reassured me that I wasn't alone, and they knew other people as well, and I thought maybe I'm onto something. So I started making up some flyers, and then I met Inca and she created this incredible website, chemtrails911.com. We started photographing and documenting it and creating more flyers, getting some articles in the papers. And frankly, all kinds of people have come out. Some people have said, this is a fraud, this is a hoax. You know, they're normal contrails. Focus on something real, something important. And to me, what could be more important than finding out what are these chemicals that are being sprayed in our sky? And as I've noticed it in the last year that I've been paying attention, I've noticed that it's been increasing. And it's been relentless. They seem to be spraying virtually every day. We've noticed the trails at night. In the full moon, you can see them. Most people don't notice. And definitely it appears that since 1998, when they have fully implemented this program, they have increased it gradually, so people wouldn't notice. And so that's where we are today. There's an article that was on a website that is very respected, and it's from the year 2000, actually at the end of 2000. And I'd like to read it. It's kind of a good introduction, even though some of the information that INCA has and that has come out in the last year takes it to another level, and we can get into that next. Is that okay if I read this little introduction real
quick? You go right ahead.
Awesome.
I'll have to check with the producer. The producer says it's all right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, we seem to be having a little problem, whatever he's reading. Ron, we're not getting you. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to have to shut down the board and come on again.
Okay.
Hang on there just a moment. Hey, Ron, I'm going to have to, I don't know what's wrong, or I'm going to have to disconnect you and have you call back again. I'm going to ask Dale if he'll call Ron back again, and we'll see if we get a better connection there. Okay, Inka, are you still there? Oh, I think we lost Inka, and so hopefully we'll get Inka back on the line too. So we're having some real problems, but just when Ron was about to speak, suddenly my board went wild. So I don't know what it probably was, just a coincidence, but suddenly we just were getting so much interference, why nothing was coming through. Anyway, there's something there. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was there was certainly was a real spraying going on all the time. Let's see if we can get either Ron or Inka back on the line. And our producer, or pardon me, our engineer is here. We'll actually get his thoughts on this. I think it's soon. Let's see. Who do we have on the line? Who's here?
Online.
Okay, Inka, is that you?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, you got cut off. And go ahead. What are your thoughts on what Ron was saying?
Well, I think he's pretty right on the money. A lot of this new spray operation seems to have been stemming from a monumental test study that happened in 1992, which was approved by Congress and funded with giving money to Harvard, Yale, General Motors, a lot of major Lawrence Livermore Lab, to go ahead and study and test ways to mitigate global warming. And some of the things that they found out is that, one, it would be most cost-effective to spray particles or soot into the atmosphere as opposed to actually cutting down on factories that pollute or, you know, human activities that actually cause pollution that deteriorate the ozone. They thought that that would be one, the most feasible option. Another couple of options that they discussed and researched was putting these huge satellites into the outer part of the atmosphere to reflect back the sun, being that the sun penetrates the ozone layers, heats up the planet, the carbon prevents the heating from going back out into space, and here we have this global warming thing. So they were thinking, well, we could spray the atmosphere with aluminum particles, they say specifically in the book. Another one was to put the solar panels into the sky, but that would be awful cost effective. They, budgeted that into the billions. Another one was to put iron into the ocean in large quantities to stimulate the protoplankton, and so that they would off gas and therefore put more oxygen into the atmosphere.
You hang on just a minute. I want to see if Ron is there, and we're going to have any problem. Ron, are you back?
I'm back.
Okay, fine.
Right.
Are you doing all right there?
I'm doing excellent.
All right, fine. So let's get ahead and let Inka know. Inka, is this a book that you got this from, or where did you get this information?
Exactly. It's called Policy Implications of Greenhouse Warming.
Now, who published this book?
It's National Academy Press.
So it's probably put out by the scientists then, isn't it?
Exactly.
Now, give me the title once more time.
Policy Implications. Of Greenhouse Warming.
Of Greenhouse Warming.
And the study was actually done in 1991, and it just came to press in 2000 under the National Academy.
And the National Academy actually published this?
Yeah, it just came out like a couple years ago. And the thing is huge. It's like 1,000 pages long. And
How expensive was it to get?
Well, you know, I got it on... Well, you know, if you buy it straight from those guys themselves, it's $100, but you can find them on Amazon.com for like $30 and under.
All right, fine. That's are these used or an original ones?
The one that I got from Amazon, it's an original one in very good condition.
All right, fine. So this is a think tank of these intellectuals, and they're telling about all these things that they can do to cut down on the severity of a greenhouse warming. Is that it?
Exactly. You know, and they're even gone as so far as to, you know, talk about putting iron into the ocean to stimulate the oxygen. And then I came across an article on January 23rd, 2001, in which our own Monterey Bay was dumping iron sulfate over a 100-square-mile patch of the ocean. And this is Moss Landing. This is here. I mean, so they're taking what's coming out of this book and really applying it. But like I said, you know, the most cost-effective way and the most easily controllable was to actually spray with aluminum reflective particles.
Okay, and Inka, pardon me, Ron, have you looked at this book that Inka's talking about?
No, I have not actually looked at that book, but I've seen it referenced.
All right, fine. So basically, this almost sounds like the Mein Kampf of the people who are controlling the spraying. Inka, did they say anything at all about letting the people know what they were doing? And why would they let the people know? Why would they allow people to be so worried? Why wouldn't they just tell them the truth about what they were doing?
Well, you see, part of this, the reasons that they're kind of nervous about this, and they actually go on to say that it could cause a public outcry for the whitening of the sky. They also say that, you know, Ken Caldera out of the Lawrence Livermore Lab, who was part of the post project that involved with this, who did lab studies on it, was extremely concerned of the health side effects, because when you release the particles of that size, of 10 microns or smaller, according to the Yale University, they actually infiltrate into the lungs and into the bloodstream, and it's extremely hazardous to the body. So they're very concerned about that, because at the rate that they emit this aluminum-barium mixture is not very systematic. The clumps can come out. There is no foolproof distribution of these fine particles.
Have you ever seen the pictures of this actually sitting on trees as is almost like a gel or strands of gel?
There's web-like substances that have been found repeatedly. And also, before the dispersal devices were fully developed, people would find on their cars and their driveways like globs of this jelly substance.
Now, you know, I've always been very skeptical of this until the young man who worked here regularly actually brought us not only pictures, but a bag full of this stuff. And it's still around someplace. I've been told by Will Thomas not to get this on you, because we don't know whether it may have brought some fungus or other organisms down from the stratosphere. But, you know, there is something there, and I've seen it. I've seen the pictures of it. I've actually seen the material myself. So it's not imaginary. And now, of course, Inka has a book that admits that this is a plan, but we can't tell the common folks. Is that it, Inka?
Exactly. You know, there's so many people involved in this project, at least 40 that are accredited in the book as taking part in this. And basically, that's right. You know, they see it as a way of, you know, protecting the ozone without having to cut back on fossil fuels and the production of harmful gases. As we've seen over the summer, our environmental rules just got slammed left and right. In the beginning of our summer, on July 24th, 2003, the Bush administration allocated $103 million for atmospheric aerosol spray operation. The document described a strategy for developing knowledge of
now, where was this written up, or where can we verify that? I've never heard that.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty it's pretty hard to swallow, but it's right there on the Bush administration launches a historical federal climate initiative, and this is from their own website. They are proud of this.
Now, do you have a link to that from your website?
Yes, most definitely.
All right, fine. So your website again is
chemtrails911.com.
Chemtrails911.com.
And so basically they say that, you know, with this $103 million two-year federal initiative is for encouraging the application of this knowledge of atmospheric aerosols. So, you know, they're kind of proud of this technology because the U.S. has a lot more money than a lot of other countries, and so they choose to put it into ways to, you know, use it for military defenses or, you know, ways to protect their own, you know, personal goals, as like the oil companies and the logging companies, because one of the things that they go on to say in the book is that the two major culprits to encouraging this greenhouse global warming thing is that all the trees are getting cut down, so there's nothing to eat up all this carbon. But, so, you know, they don't want to cut back on their environmental conditions at all. They even went so far as over the summer, they weakened oil refineries and coal refineries regulations, so all these aging coal refineries didn't have to upgrade with environmentally sound equipment. They were able to just put whatever standard run-of-the-mill equipment that was most cost-effective for them. So it's really contradictory when you look at it.
Oh, I know. You comment on this $103 million for atmospheric aerosols, but could that be something like a Freon and other things, or is this specifically the spraying, or do we know what specific atmospheric aerosols they're talking about?
Well, when they talk about dealing with natural carbon cycles,
okay,
those are some major red flags.
Okay,
there.
Fine. That certainly sounds exactly what we're talking about. You know, what's so interesting is that I've been at this game for a lot longer than you have, Inka.
Sure.
And it was 20 years ago when they were going to put parking lots in every church in Santa Cruz, every doctor's office, they were going to put parking meters in them to discourage people from driving their cars. And, you know, of course, we have here in Santa Cruz probably the cleanest air in the entire state. And so we went to this big meeting with, all the experts there from the air control system, and they were saying about, you realize that every day we put 14 tons of carbon into the air. And I got up and said, look, we got the cleanest air in the entire state, and only 2 days out of the entire year, 1 day out of the entire year, have we exceeded the very high controls we have here in the state of California, much higher than any other place in the nation. Then I said, why don't you do something about the diesel trucks, that soot that they're putting out? Oh, that's not smog. There's nothing wrong with the diesel, I said, of course you can see it belching up. No. I mean, you're not smart like I. We have a degree in this. Let me define smog to you. And this long dissertation on what smog was, and it had to do with a certain amount of nitrous oxide, I don't even remember. And I'm sitting there, it's just like, don't believe your eyes, you believe us, don't believe your lying eyes, because we're smarter than you are. And it's been so obvious all along that they were allowing the diesel trucks to continue spewing out the black smoke to create the problem, and only now, 20 years later, they suddenly said, hey, we suddenly found that diesel smoke really creates a soot, and that's where the real problem is. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, how dumb do they think we are? And I guess they think we're pretty dumb because we let them get away with it.
Well, that kind of goes to what Ron was saying earlier. It's happening so much in our skies right now, but we spend, as most of the people here, we spend most of our time indoors. We maybe get up in the morning and we walk to our car. Do we look at the sky? No. We look at our watch. Are we late for work? We come home. We're focused on eating, maybe spending time with the family. So we don't really pay much attention to what's happening above us. So we don't have much memory of what natural skies, should look like, because it has happened over a period of time. So it started out slowly, and it's getting worse. So our conditioning level is really high. We've been really programmed to think that most of that stuff in the sky is normal when it's absolutely not.
It's interesting that once people actually realize what's going on in the sky, Dr. Stan, it becomes obvious. And until then, it's not like you can just look up and see it, because we've been conditioned, like Inka was saying, to not notice and just think it's a cloud or think it's a normal contrail. But once someone has done enough research and, you know, seen that there's something going on here, seen the photographs that are identical from all over the country and NATO countries and Canada as well, and then start looking up and start putting the dots together. See, that's what they don't want us to do. They want us to just go along as drones and be in debt and be stressed and be in fear with all the terrorist alerts and the orange alerts and not pay attention to what's gradually, day by day, happening in our very sky. It's amazing to me how people can protest, you know, this government's motions in the Middle East and so many different levels in other countries, in our international policies, in all of this current administration's policies. But when it comes down to something so close in our very sky, they don't believe it.
But remember, this did not just start with the Bush administration. I'm no great defender of the Bush administration. This was going on in the Clinton administration as well.
Okay.
This involves both administrations, because there's really not a dime's worth of difference between them.
Yep.
They may have a president who's a little bit better looking,
exactly.
But the real agenda is laid out by people, and the presidents are simply figureheads for the power elite that really makes the decisions as to what's really going on. So,
clearly.
And go ahead, Inka.
Absolutely, because when you look at the people who are in these universities and who are in these labs, they're not in by, you know, being voted in. They're not in by appointment. They get there and they stay there. So you have the same, you know, agenda that goes on through whatever administration's taking place. It still gets funded. It never fluctuates. It increases, but it's always a constant stream of money going for these operations in which they don't want to tell the American people or the rest of the world. They're working really closely with the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. And since this is not just happening in our country, it's happening globally, and what we can tell is in the NATO countries are getting hit pretty much as hard as we are. So it's a bigger operation, and it's part of a big machine that wants to control every part of the Earth.
Well, now tell me, have you run into any consideration that the chemtrails are somehow tied into HAARP, and that I'd read something from Joel Skousen recently suggesting that perhaps they were bouncing these rays off the ionosphere and then bouncing them down into these areas where they have the chemtrails. Have you heard of anything? I'm not quite certain.
Absolutely.
Why they would even do something like
that. I actually have an article right here that relates to that.
Okay.
I'd love to read it.
Go right ahead. And incidentally, do you want to read whatever you had before?
No.
Let's hope that we won't have the same thing happen again.
Oh, yeah. It looks like we're doing so good so far. This is from January 24th, 2002, by a gentleman by the name of Bob Fitrakis, and he's a journalist. The debate surrounding the federal government's alleged weather modification experiments has landed in the U.S. Capitol, thanks to Cleveland Democrat Dennis Kucinich. Representative Kucinich introduced the Space Preservation Act of 2001 on October 2nd last year, seeking a permanent ban on the basing of weapons in space. The bill, H.R. 2977, specifically outlaws a variety of weapons.
Okay, go ahead.
Detailed in the December 6, 2001 Columbus Life article, Stormy Weather, which exposed allegations of secret government aerial spraying activities, Kucinich's bill explicitly outlaws chemtrails.
All right, fine. Well, we'll get into this in just a minute. And obviously, they're doing these things. They're not telling the American people the truth. And if they can conceal the truth about this, what else are they concealing from us? What are their real plans? And we'll be back here in just a moment. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, our guest this afternoon is Inka and Ron, and we're talking about chemtrails. And Ron, do you want to go ahead? Anything more in that article you'd like to read?
It's interesting. Alive asked Kucinich why he would introduce a bill banning so-called chemtrails when the U.S. government routinely denies such things exist, and the U.S. Air Force has routinely called chemtrail sightings a hoax. Quote, "The truth is there's an entire program in the Department of Defense, Vision for 2020, that's developing these weapons," Kucinich responded. Kucinich says he plans to reintroduce a broader version of the bill later this month. Plasma, electromagnetic, sonic, or ultrasonic weapons and laser weapon systems were amongst those banned by H.R. 2977. Two scientists working at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base informed Alive of the ongoing secret experiments, one involving weather modification, and the other involving the creation of an aerial antenna using a barium stearate chemical trail. The scientists refer to the work of legendary inventor Nikola Tesla. Before Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, or Star Wars, there was Tesla's vision of high-tech space-based warfare and weather modification. According to Tesla biographer Margaret Cheney, no relation to Dick Cheney, I'm sure, federal agents seized Tesla's papers after his death in 1943. At least one set of Tesla's papers had reached Wright Field, now called Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The Aeronautics Systems Division at Wright-Patterson admitted it had the Tesla papers, but claimed they were destroyed. However, Tesla's dream is embodied in a glossy brochure titled Vision for 2020, released by the U.S. Space Command in 1998. The brochure states, "The emerging synergy of space superiority with land, sea, and air superiority will lead to full spectrum dominance," end quote. The Space Command spells out its purpose pretty plainly, quote, "Dominating the space dimensions of military operations to protect U.S. interest and investment," end quote. There's nothing new here for those who have been paying attention. In the 1970s, Jimmy Carter's National Security Advisor, Mr. Brzezinski, bluntly stated in his book, Between Two Ages, quote, "Technology will make available to the leaders of major nations techniques for conducting secret warfare, of which only a bare minimum of the security forces need to be appraised. Techniques of weather modification could be employed to produce prolonged periods of drought or storm." On January 4th this year, Canadian professor Michael Chedovsky at the Center of Research on Globalization at the University of Ottawa issued a report noting that weapons have the ability to trigger climate changes. Quote, "Both the Americans and Russians have developed capabilities to manipulate the world's climate. In the U.S., the technology is being perfected under the High Frequency Active Oral Research Program." As you mentioned, that's HARP, as part of the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI. Chudovsky wrote, quote, "Recent scientific evidence suggests that HARP is fully operational and has the ability of potentially triggering floods, droughts, hurricanes, and earthquakes. From a military standpoint, HARP is a weapon of mass destruction." Doubters of the military secret plan should refer to George and Meredith Friedman's The Future of War, Power, Technology, and American World Dominance in the 21st Century. The Friedman's government touted arms experts, quote, and favorites of the military-industrial complex assert that, quote, "The American experience of power will rest on the domination of space," end quote. The U.S. Air Force giddily embraced the Friedman's thesis in the 1996 report, quote, "New World Vistas, Air and Space Power for the 21st Century," end quote. The Air Force report notes, quote, "In the next two decades, new technologies will allow the fielding of space-based weapons of devastating effectiveness to be used to deliver energy and mass as force projection in tactical and strategic conflict," end quote. It goes on to say State University of New York professor of journalism Carl Grossman, writing in 1999, revealed how the mainstream corporate press virtually ignores the government's pronouncements, while trade journals like Space News, Defense News, Aviation Week, Space Technology and Electronic Engineering Times routinely report on the military-industrial complex's high-tech breakthroughs. As for chemtrail skeptics, they might want to consult Rutgers University political science professor Leonard Cole's book, Clouds of Secrecy. the Army's germ warfare test over populated areas. Chemtrail deniers are apparently happy with the thought that their beloved paternalistic government would engage in aerial spraying over densely populated areas. U.S. Representative Marty Sabo, a Democrat from Minnesota, denounced, quote, the secret Army program to spray Minneapolis and other cities with chemicals in the 1950s and 60s, end quote. The Minneapolis Star Tribune reported in September 1994, quote, the idea that the government would use its own citizens as guinea pigs is appalling, and I condemn it in the strongest possible terms, end quote. Sabo told a House subcommittee investigating the secret spraying, which used fluorescent tracers to mark wind patterns. As for the Army, it argues that the secret Cold War era spraying was not, quote, human experimentation, since it didn't target any specific individuals, and the zinc cadmium sulfide used was harmless. But the International Agency for Research on Cancer lists all cadmium compounds as cancer-causing agents. Former students of Clinton Elementary in South Minneapolis told an investigating panel from the National Research Council that the Army's secret chemical spraying adversely affected their health, according to the Star Tribune. Skeptics who continued to insist the government would never be involved in secret aerial spraying, particularly in Ohio, may want to address their questions to the C-130 air crews from the 910th Airlift Wing stationed at Youngstown Air Reserve Station. In July 2000, an Air Force press release bragged, quote, 15 service members from military installations in Germany and England were at Ramstein Air Base, Germany, 8th to 12th of May, learning how to use chemicals to destroy the enemy. The 7 airmen and 8 soldiers learned how to plan, execute, and oversee the entire process of applying pesticides by air. The press release said the Youngstown Air Unit will only be used against insects with their deadly diseases. Apparently, insects take many forms. During the Seattle demonstrations against the World Trade Organization in November 1999, CNN reported that the military air unit with pathogen capacity to induce sickness in humans was deployed against the demonstrators. Interesting article, just gives a little bit of an overview.
I don't think you can, when you have the police and the demonstrators so close together, there's no way imaginable you could, have, of course, apply anything just to the demonstrators. It would hit everybody there. But I think that there's certainly some very, very provocative things in the article, although I would question that they can target the populace and not the police for aerosol spraying. Be that as it may, it's going on, and they're lying to the American people. That is really what's so disturbing to me.
Yes.
And had I not actually seen this on the trees, had I not actually have a bag full of this material, had I not seen this happening in the skies, and knowing that Santa Cruz, for one reason or another, seems to be a target for this, and I think we should all be concerned, because what will the long-range health implications of this be? And if there's nothing to conceal, why is the government concealing it?
A very good point. You know, back when they made this patent here, you know, you got to look a little bit at, like, the terms that they use. They're never going to come out and say anything about chemtrails because they don't think of it like that. They think of it as persistent contrails. In 1975 U.S. Navy patent, they actually say, quote, the term contrail was adopted for convenience in identifying the visible powder trail of this invention. And this invention that they go on to talk about is to disperse titanium dioxide over the population. So it's like,
now why would they want to use titanium dioxide?
Well, they go on to say in the patent, they said that titanium has a super high reflective particles for reflecting the sun's heat back into space. So that
would fit into Edward Teller's plan to create a reflective shield to hold off 1-2% of the sun's rays and slow down global warming, potentially.
And they give us little bits of this information. They give us a little bit here and a little bit there, and they try to condition us. Like, our own poor town of Watsonville was sprayed this past summer. The article from the Sentinel is, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Mosquito Patrol. To me, that is a total slap in the face for a headline.
What do you expect from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which is the extension of the Dow Jones Corporation, and it is, of course, part of the thought control process. It's the conservative arm, pseudo-conservative arm of the establishment.
Right, but this is one way that they try to condition the people. Oh, we're going to spray for mosquitoes and West Nile virus. You know, and it's for your own good because we love you and we care about you. And it even goes on to say right in the Sentinel, in the article, that most people infected with the virus never become ill. But so this is part of their way to condition us that spraying is good for us.
Well, now, was this actually, were they actually doing some spraying at the time or what?
Yeah, this was on June 17, 2003.
Now, what were they spraying for?
Excuse me?
What were they spraying for mosquitoes or what?
Yeah, the West Nile virus. They were spraying actually biological chemicals to help so that the mosquitoes would not reproduce.
Okay.
And, you know, we're breathing this stuff in, but it's good for us, you know. And, you know, other examples are like in Oklahoma over on March 17, 2003. They were, you know, out of the Oklahoma Channel News, tests were delayed after citizens' complaint that the use of egg white powder is causing allergic reactions.
Listen to this. I've got a partial history of secret U.S. government programs. Listen to this. 1950. And in an experiment to determine how susceptible an American city would be to biological attack, the U.S. Navy sprays a cloud of bacteria from ships over San Francisco.
That was the Serasi experiment.
Exactly. Monitoring devices are situated throughout the city in order to test the extent of infection. Many residents become ill with pneumonia-like symptoms. 1951, Department of Defense begins open-air tests using disease-producing bacteria and viruses.
Now, what are you getting this from, Rob?
This is an article from, looks like Cornell University.
Okay, go ahead. Sounds very interesting.
1951, let's see, Department of Defense begins open-air tests using disease-producing bacteria and viruses. Tests last through 1969, and there is concern that people in the surrounding areas have been exposed. 1953, U.S. military releases clouds of zinc, cadmium, sulfide, gas over Winnipeg, St. Louis, Minneapolis, Fort Wayne, and the Monocacy River Valley in Maryland, and Leesburg, Virginia. Their intent is to determine how efficiently they could disperse chemical agents. Joint Army-Navy-CIA experiments are conducted in which tens of thousands of people in New York and San Francisco are exposed to the airborne germs, Serratia,
Serratia.
Yeah, Mercessens and Bacillus Gulagigi, 1955. The CIA, in an experiment to test its ability to infect human populations with biological agents, releases a bacteria withdrawn from the Army's biological warfare arsenal over Tampa Bay, Florida. 1956, U.S. military releases mosquitoes infected with yellow fever over Savannah, Georgia and Avon Park, Florida. Following each test, Army agents posing as public health officials test victims for effects. 1966, the U.S. Army dispenses Bacillus subtilis variant Niger throughout the New York City subway system. How nice. More than 1 million civilians are exposed when Army scientists drop light bulbs filled with the bacteria onto ventilation grates. 1977, Senate hearings on health and scientific research confirm that 239 populated areas had been contaminated with biological agents between 1949 and 1969. Some of the areas included San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Key West, Panama City, Minneapolis, and St. Louis. 1987, Department of Defense admits that despite a treaty banning research and development of... gosh.
And, you know, there's all sorts of current stuff that show that this kind of thing is happening as well. You know, in the 1994s, you know, they were dropping goo substance on Oakville on the Pacific Coast here. Everyone in that town came down with the flu and flu-like symptoms. When the test results were analyzed, it was a nasty bacteria of a Fludosamine fluorescence. And that specific Pseudomonas fluorescens was actually cited in 160 military papers as an experimental biological bacteria. I mean, this is happening here and now. I mean, they try to let us think that, you know, spraying is good. You know, when Bush went over to Russia, for the Jubilee and the beginning of spring, oh, it's going to be great. We have 10 aircraft ready to spray the area just to make sure it's not going to rain. And they're so proud of this stuff.
Let me go to Kevin, who's calling here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
Sure, you're doing just fine.
Okay, I'm on a cell phone. Yeah, just a couple of things to confirm what both people were saying. A while back, Inca said it's true. Nobody looks up, and that's a fact. 99% of the people I talked to were oblivious to this.
Well, you're going to have to help us get the information out, because maybe if they start looking at this, they'll begin questioning everything.
You're absolutely right. In fact, the other day I went out, my next-door neighbor right here on the, in Santa Cruz on the ocean, and it was a beautiful morning, and but they had been spraying those chemtrails pre-dawn, and the whole sky was laced, and you could still see about three or four flights. And it was a beautiful morning nonetheless. And, he came out and he said, isn't it a beautiful day? I said, yeah, except for those doggone chemtrails. And he didn't have a clue what I was talking about. And I said, those aren't clouds up there. those are coming out of the exhaust of those jets you see. And, anyway, it was kind of amusing, but he got interested real quick and is doing some research and educating himself on it.
Well, why don't you have him go to Inca's website? It sounds like she's got a great site there.
I gave him a flyer that's been being passed around and has all that information on it. But to confirm what Ron said, I had a friend that was in a car accident up in Sacramento and asked me to go up and pick up a police report for her, which I did. I was in the area, and so I just drove up there and went to the Highway Patrol office there, and I just happened to get the head honcho there, and without giving rank or anything like that. But the thing is that I said, you're a man in a position of authority. I said, what is wrong with this picture? What is wrong with what's going on above us? And he says, well, I really haven't been paying attention. He's kind of an older gentleman. He says, and I told him about the spraying and stuff. He said, well, that doesn't surprise me. He was a pilot during the Cold War. And he said, and of course the information was classified, it's been declassified now, and that they used to consistently spray influenza virus and things. The Russians and out of Alaska, Russians spray us, we spray them, and so it's just nothing new under the sun there. And then another point is that in trying to control the weather, they're just knocking other things out of balance besides making a lot of people very sick. And that, not that it's connected with the earthquake that have been happening, it's just another thing that, if you look at the couple of websites, maybe I shouldn't mention them, but the earthquakes that are happening every day now around the globe is just incredible.
And you'll be interesting to know that they've upped the HAARP power to about 3.2 billion just this last week or so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And many times just a coincidence that we had the terrible, terrible earthquake in Paso Robles and Iran. I don't know for certain. But
well,
I'll tell you what, they don't know either. And do they really know what they're doing?
Two in Mexico, the last day or so, the Paso Robles, 50,000 lives possibly, up to 50,000 lives lost in one day in Iran for that last earthquake over there. And,
What happens if what they're doing is bringing this about?
Yes, I believe that. And the chemtrails is just one item in a basket of many. And the bigger picture, of course, is what you mentioned in your beginning of your show, where dealing with reality is a hard thing, and people really don't want to look up, and they really don't want to pull their head out of the sand. But the truth is that the sands of time are running out. If you would dare to embrace the reality of what's happening and Bible prophecy and understanding the cross and the last days and preparing. It's a time of preparation, and it's your show is a wake-up call, and thank God for it. Give people a chance to embrace reality and deal with it, and it's hard, I know, but I'm very grateful for your show and your guests, and not very many people want to deal with the issue because their lives are burdened with so many other things.
Well, far better off to burden them with this now that maybe we could have them back than wait until it's too late. Hey, thank you so much for calling, Kevin. Really appreciate your call.
Exactly. Okay. If we had been paying attention a little bit sooner, we'd gotten this far.
But, you know, we are having an event in Santa Cruz on January 19th at the Santa Cruz Vets Hall from 2 to 5 p.m., in which we'll have an open discussion, a panel for interviews, and we'll be showing the Chemtrail Exposed video. So, you know, once you start to educate yourself and you actually see, you know, something to compare our sky to, like on a video or on the website, it really takes on a new meaning when you go back outside and you look up and you see a big X over your house.
Now, when is that going to be?
That meeting is on January 19th.
January 19th.
It's Monday. It's Martin Luther King Day.
Okay.
It's from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Santa Cruz Vets Hall, downtown Santa Cruz, on Front Street next to the post office. And it's free. Everyone is absolutely cordially and warmly invited. We're going to show the Chemtrails Exposed movie for the first hour. We're going to have a discussion. We might even have Will Thomas on a speakerphone to address some of the more detailed questions. And it'll be a lot of opportunity to meet other people who are aware of the situation. I mean, this is something, Dr. Stan, that crosses and is bigger than any left or right, any religious or ideological differences. This transcends any kind of dualities or differences between people, because very simply, we all breathe, we all have families, our health is our life.
And we're all under attack today, and I agree with you. Ron, would you mind getting me a copy of that article that you started to read, where you're doing the chronological story about the Serratia here and the, you know, the other things that they were putting out elsewhere?
Absolutely.
That sounded fascinating. Is that up on ICLA's website, too?
It isn't, but we can get it to you.
It'll be posted tomorrow.
Okay, fine. Let's go to, everybody hang on now. We're going to go to Terry calling it
from Santa Cruz.
Terry, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Well, I wanted to mention a couple of things. The chemtrails, I don't know, I've been listening, but I was distracted for a while. I don't know if your guest mentioned the chemtrails and the barium and how it enhances the HARP's electromagnetic radiation abilities.
Yeah, we've covered all of those things.
Okay, great. And then the other man that just called mentioned earthquakes and things, and there are some interesting websites that have to do with the scalar energy buildup before these earthquakes happen. And it also deals with the, there's a good article on the Cutting Edge about the Yellowstone volcano that's been acting up lately, and the scalar energy that can be detected around that as well.
Okay, now by scalar, you're referring to HARP energy?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, fine.
Electromagnetic
energy. David
Bay
does a good job there on his website. Okay, anything else you want to say, Terry?
No. Have you talked to Dr. Begich lately?
Yeah, we've had him on about within the last 3 weeks.
Oh, great.
Okay, thanks so much, Terry.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, well, then... Inka and Ron, obviously there are a lot of people out there who share your concern about these chemtrails, and I just hope that you can wake a lot of people here in Santa Cruz up. I want you to call in perhaps on the Saturday before or the Friday before Martin Luther King Day, and we'll try to get information out, get as many people out to your program as possible.
That would be awesome.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Well, it's a real privilege. In fact, you really have got so much great information, and I really would like to get you onto some of our other programs, but I'll have to call you off the air and schedule that, maybe our shortwave program that goes out across the country and really does have a tremendous listening audience.
That'd be wonderful, yeah.
There's one interesting thing I'd just like to share real quick. United States Code Title 50, War and National Defense, Chapter 32, Chemical and Biological Warfare Program, Section 1520, Use of Human Subjects for Testing of Chemical or Biological Agents by Department of Defense. It was repealed in 1997, and it was replaced in part by this law, U.S. Code Title 50, Section 1520, repealed A, prohibited activities. The Secretary of Defense may not conduct directly or by contract any test or experiment involving the use of a chemical agent or biological agent on a civilian population, or 2, any other testing of a chemical agent or biological agent on human subjects. So clearly this is illegal, and...
But actually, if you look at that title there, and you read and you go on a little bit further, it has all these nice little exceptions.
The exceptions subject to subsection C, D, and E of this section.
So then, you know, they write these documents so that they can cover their own behind, so that they can do this and say, well look, Congress approved this.
Listen,
this actual Title 50 had been revised in 97 and then revised in 2000. So basically, they changed the laws to allow them to, you know, do what they want to do.
Listen how they manipulate this. The prohibition in Section A of this section does not apply to a test or experiment carried out for any of the following purposes. In other words, this is what allows them legally to spray us with chemicals. One, any peaceful purpose that is related to a medical, therapeutic, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity. Well, that's quite broad. I'm sure that they could put anything in that category. Two, any purpose that is directly related to protection against toxic chemicals or biological weapons and agents. Three, any law enforcement purpose, including any purpose related to riot control. Think it can't be done in the land of the free? Think again. Open-air biowar testing has been carried out in American cities since 1949, and it appears from the trails in our sky on a daily basis that it may be continuing.
And for the skeptic out there who says this could not be true, we have a report called the Rockefeller Committee Report, came out of the Veterans Administration, and I don't know how this thing ever got out, but it's one of the most devastating exposés of experimenting on not only on the military, but on the general American population. That's a Rockefeller report. They only made up 25 of those, I think, for the entire country. And I called the U.S. Publishing House, I think 35, because I bought 25 of the ones they had. And the fellow said, oh, well, they're so expensive to type up or to print up, so we only made 35 other than those we gave out to the members of the committee. And we still have those, and we've actually reproduced it. They don't want the American people to know what's in this report, and it reiterates exactly what Ron was saying about how they have been experimenting and spraying the American people, going back to the Serratia experiments, and people died as a result of that, but they don't care. And nothing is ever done to the people who experiment on American citizens in violation of every precept of law or righteousness. Well, we're just about out of time. Inka, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Look up, wake up, and speak out. Visit the website, Chemtrails 911. Educate yourself and tell everybody you know, because this has got to end immediately. This just cannot be allowed to continue.
Ron, what about you?
I would just like to thank our listening audience. I know this is a very intense subject, and I would agree to look up, wake up, and speak out, and go to our website, chemtrails911.com. And also want to share that the work without our group is doing in Santa Cruz is receiving national attention. We get emails of people praying for our success. There are tens of thousands of people around the country who are devastated and very concerned about this, and we can lead the way here in Santa Cruz. So if you're out there listening, go to the website, look up, and tell your friends we can stop this. Thank you.
God bless you both. Thank you so much for being with us. We've had Ron and Inka here. It's been a fascinating hour, and we'll look forward to having you on again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, this is the time that we want to, of course, remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you'd be interested in knowing more about our ministry, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, go to our website at radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com, and then pray for America. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front line of this truly spiritual battle for the souls and hearts of men. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.